This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com. Welcome to podcast number 4 of the We Don't Have a Cool Name Yet podcast. I'm here with the gang. It's John, K. Scott, Kevin, and I'm Scott Coon. This week, K. Scott is going to give us a brief from the trenches tech ed recap of what he can remember. And we're going to talk a little bit about the iPhone V2 Jesus phone release and announcement from yesterday. So, who wants to start first?
I want one. What else is there to say?
In general, the reaction that I've seen has been pretty favorable.
Let me try and do a bullet point, and then you guys tell me how wrong I am. So there's 3G, which is much faster data rate. There's GPS built in, which is cool. There's, I think one of the big features is price cut. They went from, I guess, originally, you know, a year ago, they were selling for $599, and now they're selling for $200. That comes with a 2-year commitment with AT&T, but most phones do anyways. They come with some kind of commitment to get what you do. They have exchange support now, so it works well with exchange. So that should help get them into the enterprise space. And then I thought that some of the stuff that they were doing with OpenGL, and just at the platform level, like they really got, it's a pretty solid platform, just graphics, push notifications, things like that. How'd I do?
Good. Except that the price cut, when you factor in the 2-year contract and the $10 increase in the data plan, kind of works out to about $240 extra for your iPhone with the price cut.
But is that $240 extra compared to the current iPhone or compared to a cheapo phone or what? Because I've screwed this up before.
Oh, that's compared to the current iPhone. So the current iPhones cost, what, about $399 with, and then you pay the data plan per month. Is it 60?
Yeah.
You still can only get an iPhone through AT&T.
That's true.
That right?
I think that's mostly true. Yeah. Although, from what I've heard, you can jailbreak them, and then you can run them with other providers.
Well, that's actually kind of a problem with the new system, is that now you're locked into a 2-year contract, which means you're paying AT&T whether or not.
So you can switch providers, but you're still paying for it.
Right. So they kind of got you by the short hairs on that one.
Well, and you used to be able to buy them online through the Apple Store and activate them at home when you got it in your box all by yourself in a smoking jacket in the basement, where you can really enjoy activating your iPhone with a nice cognac and a cigar. But now you actually have to go to the store or go to an AT&T store and activate it in the store. And for some reason, a lot of people have a problem with that.
I've been a long-time smartphone user, and I understand the iPhone has a lot of capabilities now. It has the ability to use Exchange Server, and I'm assuming it would integrate then with Outlook also on my desktop. What would I be missing moving from a smartphone to an iPhone? Would I miss anything?
Frequent reboots and restarts?
Well, you know, I think that to be fair, you have to compare with Windows Mobile 6. And I've had previous Windows Mobile phones, and they were pretty crappy. I got a HTC Tilt last year, and I think that it's a lot different than previous versions. Like, I don't have reboots. I have, you know, with a little bit of customization, it sure works pretty well.
So one of the advantages of the iPhone, I mean, and obviously there are many. I too don't own one yet. I'm kind of stuck in a 2-year contract, and I can't get out of it right now, unless Congress passes a bill, which we may talk about, you know, at some point. But one of the things you get with the iPhone is you get a real live browser, not a mobile browser that, you know, shrinks everything down or you know, serves you some white, you know, black text on a white background version of the site, you get Safari, you get WebKit, you get a real live rendering engine. And the second thing that you've kind of got is this idea of the push app. So instead of having to download new updates of the apps, and I don't know how Windows Mobile, you know, handles this, but right now the app developer for the iPhone is going to be able to push a version out to your phone. Out to the store, and the store will push it to your phone. And I believe I've got that.
Yeah, to me the killer feature is the web browsing, as Scott pointed out. I mean, it is an unmatched mobile web browsing experience, as far as I've seen. Not just in terms of the user experience, but and the fact that you can go to any website and, you know, pan around and scroll around, which is killer. But, you know, I kind of see the iPhone as sort of the first real crossover smartphone. You're seeing a lot of, before the iPhone, I didn't see a lot of Windows Mobile smartphone optimized websites, because there just wasn't enough out there. I'm seeing plenty of iPhone optimized websites. So not only is the web browsing experience awesome, but the sites are putting out optimized for iPhone experiences, which is even better.
That's totally it. I think that the browser is, like, you really have to play with Safari on an iPhone to get how good it is. Like, it shows the page shrunk down. People don't have to develop a separate version of the site for it to work well on an iPhone. You get to see a shrunk down version of it. You click on it, it zooms in, and it's just so smooth. And that really is a frustrating part. It's something that you can work around on Windows Mobile, but the fact that you have to work around it means most people won't do it. Like, I've installed Opera Mini on my phone, and it's a pretty similar experience, although behind the scenes it's proxying. So I request a web page, it goes up to Opera, they request the page, they do some magic stuff behind the scenes, and then they send me this kind of shrunk down thing. So it works really well, but and on 3G, I guess it doesn't matter that much, but it's not as good as having a built-in phone. And then I guess there's the Skyfire browser, and there's DeepFish from Microsoft. DeepFish had a beta. I haven't got to play with it. I understand it's similar, but I think that really is a huge thing that Microsoft kind of needs to get on the ball with to be competitive.
Now, to be fair to the Windows-based smartphones, one feature that, as far as I know, is not and will not be in the view of the iPhone is tethering, being able to use your smartphone as a wireless modem to your PC. So that feature will continue to give the advantage to Windows Mobile for a lot of people.
Although I would kind of think that you know, in the case of the iPhone, you almost don't need to tether because, you know, you've got, especially when the apps start coming online. I just saw that Brent Simmons is going to make an iPhone version of NetNewsWire. That is an incredible RSS reader for OS X. And I'm sure that other app developers are going to follow. I'm sure that Will Shipley is sitting around thinking about how to create a version of Delicious Library. Kevin, you mentioned Twitterific. Yeah, I know that's coming. That's featured in the App Store page at Apple. Yeah, so it's kind of removing the need to tether if you can use these kinds of apps on your phone itself.
I think that is true, although there's a lot that you just can't do on a 4x3-inch screen. I don't need to pay for crappy hotel Wi-Fi anymore, and I can make check-ins to Team System or Subversion, you know, on my laptop via my tethered phone, which is pretty slick. I've seen people have gotten mono running on an iPhone. I wouldn't want to develop on an iPhone necessarily. I could be proved wrong.
You are a patient, patient man if you can do a check-in over a tethered connection.
No, 3G. 3G is pretty quick. So I it really is. I mean, you can watch video over it. It's a pretty good connection.
Okay, well, I think we've covered the iPhone. Were there any other questions that anyone had about the iPhone? Other than, you know, you may not get the cult aspect of, you know, must-buy Apple product on release.
I'm kind of occasionally snarky about the iPhone, and I really think that they nailed it partly by just being so smart with the pricing. They're going to make their money, but selling it at $200 all of a sudden makes it a really good deal.
I'd agree. It certainly increased the wife acceptance factor. Or husband acceptance factor.
My wife's a Mac user, and she's been telling me we need an iPhone day one. So in this case, I think it's more of the latter, the husband acceptance factor.
The half and the waff. So the other big announcement to come out of the WWDC keynote was there were two big ones that we didn't discuss. The first one being the rechristening of .Mac as Mobile Me. And the second one, which really there isn't a lot of information about, is the upcoming Snow Leopard release. It looks like it's mainly a performance and a quality kind of update. But to me, Mobile Me is a much more interesting story than a very large, essentially a service pack. So Mobile Me includes a lot of features that .Mac has already had, but not necessarily in the scale that it has had. It features contact syncing, calendar syncing, 20 gig iDrive, which I think the 20 gig size may be new with Mobile Me. I think .Mac before came with either a 5 gig or a 10 gig iDrive.
It is 20 gigabytes. It went from 10 gigabytes to 20. I can say one thing about Mobile Me that's interesting to me and has nothing to do with Apple or an iPhone is that they're not supporting IE6, which I think is great and ballsy and cool, because I think it's about time that people stop supporting IE6 and it goes away. So, I mean, I think that's something, you know, Microsoft's going to keep supporting it for a while, but I think it's just awesome that vendors are going to say, no, we're done with this thing. It's no good. So that's good news for me. A
couple of things that were interesting to me on the Mobile Me stuff, is that I didn't actually get to see the keynote, but I was listening to it. And one of the things they kept saying was, look, it's just like the desktop experience. The UI is just like a desktop experience. And that, to me, is kind of a turnoff. I don't generally like it when web apps try to mimic a desktop experience. It always looks funky and clunky. And so I'll reserve my judgment until I see the final thing. That's kind of a red flag.
I'd be interested to see how Apple pulls that off, you know, because they are so good with user interface, and maybe that's something that might be cool to see.
Yeah, maybe they can pull it off, but it definitely is not how I like to think about web apps. But the other thing that kind of struck me is that, Apple is charging $100 a year for Mobile Me, which, you know, sort of you can accumulate the same set of services for free, you know, with Gmail and whatever. Obviously the Mac people are probably more used to paying for this kind of stuff than a lot of PC users are. But that's something that just kind of struck me as a little steep.
So the tagline on Mobile Me is "Exchange for the rest of us." I like that. So I was going to say, historically, the $99 a year for .Mac has been kind of a sticking point for the Mac faithful. Lots of downtime, some instances of losing data, not real reliable. So you're kind of paying $100 and essentially putting it on black 12. On the roulette wheel of .Mac. Not too many people were impressed with that. But when it was up, it was seamless. So, Kevin, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, so one interesting thing about MobileMe is that there are shades of mesh in there. They're touting a bunch of sync features where this information will be synced across, you know, your iPhone, your desktop, and the web. Although it sounds like a much less far-reaching of a platform. They're not really describing it in platform terms the way the Mesh guys are. They're describing it just as some features with their services. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But Mike looks like they're kind of headed in the same direction as Microsoft in some of these things.
One thing they're doing here I think that's cool is that MobileMe includes mail, contacts, and calendar, and that's something Mesh, as far as I understand, doesn't do. This is kind of, you've got the whole Exchange ActiveSync world for your calendar, you know, your communication, the Outlook kind of stuff. And then you've got Mesh for files and stuff. And so it's great that MobileMe seems to be kind of saying, it's all your stuff. You know, you don't want to sort out which is Outlook stuff and which is file stuff. It's all stuff. So it's mobile stuff. And I like that.
So there's one other thing that MobileMe is going to be shipping with on launch. And that Mesh won't be on launch or hasn't on launch. Support for the competing platform. Right out of the box, you'll be able to use MobileMe with your Windows PC or your Mac. And as far as I know, Mesh is promising. They're kind of doing the weasel words with Mac support. They're saying, well, there's an API, so anything is possible. You know, at this point, I guess I'm kind of cynical when it comes to software announcements in general, but especially from Microsoft, whenever they announce something, I fall back on my Missouri roots and I say, you know, you really got to show me that you're going to be, you know, supporting OS X.
Again, I think it comes down to Microsoft's sort of traditional strength, which is Microsoft is a platform company, sort of what they know how to build. And so what they've built with Mesh is a platform. Mac sort of, the Apple sort of targets more features and user experience over platform. It's kind of a philosophical approach, I think. And I'm sure they always have their strengths set there. The Mesh stuff is a bit more abstract, a bit tougher to sell.
Okay. So let's move on to the Tech Ed recap. We talked briefly last week. Did we talk briefly? We talked briefly, I think, about some of the announcements that we saw at Tech Ed, and there was kind of a sense of yawning around a lot of the announcements. Silverlight Beta 2 wasn't a big surprise. Velocity was kind of a surprise. But, you know, again, it's kind of out there, but not a lot of people are using it. It's still it's a CTP, I think, now. I saw Scott Watermasek had put up a blog post or two about actually trying to use it, setting it up. Those were interesting, but I don't know if it's a... The excitement level may have been a little different when you're there in person, K. Scott.
Yes, well, I was there in person. I attended the keynote by Bill Gates, and there's always a lot of excitement around the Bill Gates keynotes because he is such a public figure, and there's cameras going on off and everything, and I guess this is supposed to be his last keynote as a full-time Microsoft employee, so that made it put a little tinge to it. There were no real surprises in that keynote. The first demo I remember was Silverlight and Windows Presentation Foundation, and the announcement that the Beta 2 bits would be dropping pretty soon, which anyone who's following Silverlight sort of suspected that would be during the week of Tech Ed. They did some demos of SQL Server 2008 and SQL Data Services, which is storage in the cloud, and Brian Harry came out and did a Visual Studio Team System demo, which was tools that where you can use the mouse to change business logic type of
thing. So I think the real question is, Oslo, is it crap or not?
And
I saw a lot of negative reactions on Twitter.
Yeah, they didn't really dig into Oslo that I can remember, but the whole premise of Oslo is it's going to be Microsoft is making a big investment in modeling tools, and that's where Oslo is going to position itself. And a lot of people just do not like are predisposed against graphical modeling tools. They'd rather work with textual DSLs. But that's I think graphical modeling tools is the direction that Oslo is going. So we'll have to see how it turns out. I think it's still too early. Oslo is going to be one of those plans that takes, I think, 5 years to come to fruition or to unveil completely. We'll see something before that, but it's going to be a while before they reach the final vision. So then after the keynote, I didn't get to attend too many sessions. I spent a lot of time in the Visual C# booth and the Visual Studio booth answering questions. There were a lot of questions about... Questions were interesting. You get a lot of questions standing there from people that want to know if it's safe to upgrade to Visual Studio 2008. And these are obviously people that might have been burned by the 2003 to 2005 upgrade, particularly web developers who all of a sudden faced this dramatically different compilation model in ASP.NET that was breaking everything. So there was some concern over versions. And there were a lot of questions about Link, people just walking up and saying, what is Link? I heard about Lambda expressions. Can you show me those? And the nice thing is we had PCs set up there with Visual Studio 2008, so you could just sit down and start writing code with somebody and showing him different features. There was one fellow that came up that had this really in-depth reflection question, which was interesting. I'm pretty sure the guy was trying to write some sort of inversion of control container to do dependency injection. And he's trying to use reflection on generic types with two generic type parameters. And we had like half the Microsoft team there trying to help the guy out. And I think they got him squared away. So that was all kind of fun. The only two sessions I went to one from Barry Gervin that was on the Entity Framework. I think he did a good job with that one. He basically presented three different ways to use the Entity Framework. One approach is to completely abstract it away beneath a data layer, and the other extreme is to use the Entity Framework to actually build your business entities that float the whole way up to the user interface layer. What I took away from that presentation was that there's a happy middle ground for a lot of people where you take advantage of the features and Entity Framework that can work for you, and you try to bury the rest of them. All right, the only other session I went to was a presentation by Neil Ford, which I thought was interesting because I don't think he's well known in the Microsoft.NET community. He's more of a Java head and a Ruby guy. But he did a presentation on design patterns and dynamic languages, and he didn't use Visual Studio. He would just throw up some Ruby code on a slide and show how with a minimal amount of Ruby code you can implement a design pattern that in Java or C# or C++ involves 5 or 6 classes.
So I'm curious with Entity Framework, there's a lot of negative reaction to it, and people seem to be upset at it. People, especially, you know, like the .NET crowd is pretty down on it. What was your kind of response, or did anything change your mind about it while you were there, or does it look pretty similar to what you'd always thought?
It's still pretty similar to what I always thought. In my mind, it still has some serious flaws that I just hope they would address in the next version of the Entity Framework. It's something they really should have looked at in the first design, but it just didn't happen. But nevertheless, there's going to be people trying to use it, and I thought Barry Gervin did a good job of showing everybody some of the techniques you can use.
One question I have is the Entity Framework stuff kind of central to the whole Oslo story? I didn't really get a sense from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, that I'm not sure either. I know the Entity Framework, I wouldn't be surprised if it did factor in there somehow, only because it originally did factor in as the cornerstone technology for things like ADO.NET data services, the Astoria project. I think originally that was built as a way to expose your entities over a RESTful web service. But they've since changed that, and now you can use the RESTful web service. You can just expose anything that throws out an iQueryable. So you can use Link to SQL, or you can use your own business objects that you come up with.
I heard a really interesting podcast today. It's from a while ago, but John Udell was interviewing somebody that had worked on WinFS, you know, which was supposed to be in Vista and the Scraft. And he was talking about the parts of WinFS that are shipping. And it's, you know, I mean, it didn't ship as, you know, this uber intelligent, you know, file system that's going to have metadata about every file. But there's so much that they did do that has trickled into SQL Server or is fitting into other products in some way. And so one thing they were talking about was this kind of modeling framework. And I think that in a way, yeah, it does fit into, you know, like the entity framework is related to Oslo in the same way that so many other things. They've got kind of a modeling language. And it's used by Link to SQL, and it's used by Entity Framework, and it's going to be, or it either already is used, or it's going to be used by a lot of other things. So that's, I think that it's all, you know, it's all going to kind of wrap up. So it's the way that I've heard it explained, it sounds like Entity Framework is related to Oslo, but not in a way that's very Entity Framework specific.
Yeah, well, they're certainly pushing Entity Framework as a way to build this conceptual model of your domain that you can use in other places for reporting. So it will ultimately end up in reporting services. It'll end up in data services. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it bubbles into Oslo. And I know the WinFS team at one time was huge. In fact, I heard it described as it was like this stellar mass that collapsed into a black hole and just kept sucking in people to work on it. and they couldn't escape and you know, obviously at some point WinFS was sort of canceled, but all those people took ideas and concepts and things that they had built and moved into other places. So
because when a black hole collapses, it forms wormholes.
Let's see, well, how would we summarize this conversation? iPhone rules, WinMob drools. Thank you for tuning in this week. We'll see you soon, or hear from you soon, I'm sure. Well, that ending sucks.